much. It's a great pleasure to be speaking to you again. I've been attending these meetings for about 40 years. As often as I can, I always enjoy them. I always learn a lot, but it's a pleasure to be able to share some of my thoughts with you again on this occasion. As with investment and economic resource allocation more generally, fiscal prudence and national sovereignty, which is the title of this session, none of us fit it very well, but we're doing our best to fit it in.
If you want to use the podium, you can.
I'm comfortable here. Thanks. Yeah. Fiscal prudence and national sovereignty must be built upon the foundation of sound money. See there, I slipped it in. Sound money, meaning money with predictable and reliably stable value. I will briefly explore the monetary policy options that are available to us and set out what, in my opinion, are the arrangements most conducive to sound money. Tall order in a short period of time, but I'm sure you will flesh it out in the Q&A. When people discuss the concept of stable money, they sometimes think of its purchasing power as measured, for example, by the Consumer Price Index. However, sometimes people think of its value relative to other currencies. In other words, its exchange rate. So this gives us the two broad ways in which people think about stable money. In fact, both are important for evaluating investment decisions and thus for economic growth. The classical gold standard of the late 19th and early 20th centuries was the closest the world has come to such an ideal system, both in the sense of, in the sense of stability in both senses of domestic purchasing power and exchange rate. It was a one world currency. When a currency was redeemable for gold at a fixed price, the supply of that currency was controlled and regulated by the market so that its purchasing power, in other words, its market value, was kept equal to the market value of gold. When other countries also fixed the gold price of their currencies, the exchange rates between those currencies were also fixed. Thus, the gold standard, to the extent that all or most countries adopted it, gave us a one-world currency and the enormous benefits of such a system of monetary stability. Despite these very important virtues and benefits of the gold standard or any other single commodity, gold or any other single commodity is not the best anchor for the value of money. Between 1880 and 1914, the period when the United States was on the classical gold standard, inflation averaged very close to zero, 0.1% per year over that period. This compares with the post-classical gold standard period, 1946 to 1990, with an average inflation rate of 4.2%, dramatically different. This was an impressive and important achievement of the gold standard. However, under the gold standard, inflation has been quite volatile in the short run. For the United States, and I'm quoting here, for the United States between 1879 and 1913, the coefficient of variation of inflation was between 17, which is quite high, and between 46 and 1990, it was only 0.8. Dramatic difference in the short-term volatility of prices under the gold standard, much higher under the gold standard, but the gold standard was perfectly predictable over very, very long periods. When Richard Nixon closed the U.S. gold window and ended the gold exchange standard in the early 1970s, the major economies generally adopted floating or market-determined exchange rates for their currencies, anchoring their monetary policies to domestic objectives rather than the exchange rate. After an unhappy experience in the late 1970s, many large country central banks have settled on inflation targets to anchor and discipline monetary policy. Like every other form of exchange, the value of money depends on its supply and demand. Monetary regimes and policies determine the behavior of money's supply. Without a hard anchor for money, as was provided by the gold standard, central banks have chosen between policy rules, such as a fixed rate of growth of the money supply, this was Friedman's rule, more flexible rules such as targeting the rate of inflation or the rate of growth of nominal income, or leaning against the wind of business cycles or maximizing employment, sometimes misnamed discretion. The experience of these various regimes has been quite different, and I don't have time to go into them. But since most money today is created by banks, their behavior and central banks' control or influence over it must be taken into account as well. This introduces the policy issues of whether banks should be required to hold 100% of the money deposited with them as cash reserves, the so-called Chicago plan, or should be free to issue their own currency when depositors want to convert their deposits into cash, so-called free banking, or something in between. The great divide among monetary policy regimes is between those with flexible or floating exchange rates that anchor the central bank's supply of its money, so-called base money, the money created by the central bank itself, to domestic rules and objectives, such as the price level or inflation target, and those that fix the currency's exchange rate, such as the gold standard. Either can be combined with the full range of banking regimes that I outlined above, the Chicago plan to free banking as being the two extremes. The last 30 or so years, with one form of inflation targeting or another, gave us the great moderation until it blew up with the Great Recession in 2008. After changes in the price level peaked in April of 1980 at a 14.6% rate of inflation, I'm speaking of the United States now, 14.6% change from a year earlier, and a mini peak of 5% inflation in May of 1990, monetary policy rules were tightened and the inflation averaged close to 2.5% for the next 12 years. This is the so-called Great Moderation. Following the bursting of the housing bubble and the great contraction, this measure of inflation has fluctuated between 5.5% in July of 2008 to a minus 2% 1 year later, back to 3.8% in September of 2011, and near zero through all of 2015. Worse yet, for international trade, exchange rates were very volatile in the post-Bretton Woods period, in other words, after the collapse of the gold exchange standard. The US dollar to euro exchange rate has varied over 60% over the last 15 years. Can you imagine, you know, planning a business around that kind of volatility? Despite their best intentions and improved data, despite their best intentions and improved data and forecasting models, central banks have not been capable of providing a stable currency or stable income. This sad record has renewed interest in the fixed exchange rate or hard anchor alternatives, attention has naturally turned to gold. But the gold standard suffered several weaknesses that led to its demise. The Federal Reserve was allowed to undertake limited expansions or contractions of its base money not fully backed with gold. Eventually, the market and other central banks lost confidence in the ability of the Fed to redeem its dollars for gold. In addition, as noted earlier, gold's value has not been stable over periods of a few years. Anchoring the value of our currency to that of a single commodity will never produce a currency with a value as stable as one anchored to a basket of commodities or goods. This is the well-known portfolio effect reflected in mutual funds. So my recommendations. I have long advocated replacing the discretion of the Federal Reserve to manipulate the money supply with a firm rule of issuing and redeeming its currency in response to market demand at a fixed price for a basket of goods, a basket of goods that reflect an average household consumption basket. This would be a strict form of a gold standard, but fixed to a broader basket of goods than just one. Commodity baskets were recommended on many earlier occasions, including by Keynes. They failed to gain support largely because they were considered too costly to operate. It was incorrectly assumed that such a system required that the currency whose value was fixed to the value of a basket of goods had to be issued and redeemed against the same basket of goods, which then would have to be stored and guarded in some kind of Fort Knox. Some time ago, Leland Yeager, a friend of this society, explained how a currency board rule would work to keep the market value of currency equal to that of its valuation basket with what he called indirect redeemability, indirect rather than direct. Arbitrage would keep the market value of the two, the currency issued and its valuation basket, the same as long as the currency could be issued or redeemed with any asset, such as a U.S. Treasury bill, of the current equivalent value. In other words, the system works perfectly well with indirect redeemability rather than actually having to issue or redeem the currency for all of the goods in the valuation basket, which is what made the concept of a basket seem improbable in earlier times. Currency boards cannot generally lend to anyone, including banks. This is a very firm, rigid rule that was, as a practical matter, absent from the earlier classical gold standard period. And part of the reason that every country on the globe turned to a central bank is central banks were first established largely to address the structural weaknesses of our fractional reserve banking system by acting as lenders of last resort when the public runs to their banks to withdraw their deposits as cash. Either the Chicago plan of 100% required reserves, sometimes called narrow banking, or allowing banks to issue their own currency redeemable for the central bank's currency, sometimes called free banking, would remove this weakness and the need for a central lender of last resort facility. Such a currency board system would provide a currency with a more reliably stable value than could a return to the gold standard. If all countries adopted such a monetary policy rule and used the same valuation basket, the world would again have currencies with fixed exchange rates as they enjoyed under the gold standard. The most promising way to accomplish this would be to adopt the international reserve asset already established by the members of the International Monetary Fund, the so-called special drawing right, or SDR, for pricing and settling internationally traded goods, such as oil, and as the asset helped by central banks as their international, held by central banks as their international reserve. I have described this proposal and the steps for implementing it in some detail in other articles, which are linked in the copy of this paper on the Philadelphia Society webpage. The United States or any other country can unilaterally adopt these proposals whenever they see fit. But the full benefit of a stable global currency, as we had with the gold standard, would best be achieved by enhancing the IMF's SDR into that role. The first phase would consist of promoting the development of private SDRs by issuing by using the IMF's SDR valuation basket to price internationally traded commodities such as oil, to extend loans from the World Bank and regional development banks in private SDRs, encouraging the establishment of SDR-denominated deposits at banks, building up private SDR-denominated financial instruments to support these activities and related payments. I noted in yesterday's Wall Street Journal that the People's Bank of China is contemplating issuing SDR-denominated bonds, which would be a step in this direction. The second step would be to replace the current SDR valuation basket, which consists of five currencies, the U.S. dollar, euro, pound, U.K. pound, Japanese yen, and the Chinese yuan, with a valuation basket of representative goods. This would stabilize the, you know, when you define what stability means, you have to define what you're comparing it to. And by having a broad basket of goods, you're stabilizing the value of the currency to what the average person purchases, which I think is the most meaningful concept of stability in the monetary area. The final step would be to amend the IMF's Articles of Agreement to provide for issuing and redeeming these SDRs according to currency board rules, and to replace via substitution the U.S. dollars and euros currently held in central bank reserves with these SDRs. So let me conclude by summing up. The implementation of monetary policy using inflation targets, which I think carries the science of central banking with market-determined exchange rates as far as it can go, has improved monetary stability compared with the 70s, but has nonetheless failed to perform satisfactorily. No central bank determined monetary policy is likely to overcome the data and forecasting deficiencies needed to be fully successful. The world would benefit from a return to a hard anchor for the value of its currency. Gold, the hard anchor used over a century ago with considerable success, would not be the best hard anchor. The United States and the world would be better served by issuing and redeeming currency whose value is fixed to that of a basket of commonly consumed goods under currency board rules. This would result in a supply of money determined completely by market demand. There's no monetary policy here, and with a value fixed and known well in advance into the future. Adopting the SDR globally for this purpose would eliminate exchange rate uncertainty, provide a solid and stable foundation on which to build and grow the world's economy. Thank you.